act that's been passed on by oral traditions and stories for many years.
And Gabriel, I forgot to mention your upcoming local book event. Can you mention the, do you know the date at?
I believe it's September 9th, I think, at the Capitola Book Cafe around 7 or 7:30. And there'll be more information about it. I'll be speaking about the novel. I've been going to some other places recently and just got back from Toronto at a large Indian festival, Masala Masti Mendi. And it was pretty exciting speaking there about it. And a lot of folks from South Asia were very interested in the story.
Yeah, I'm curious to hear how the book is being received. There's a lot of different people who are interested in Buddhism and call themselves Buddhists, and they might have a variety of ways of viewing how you're writing about Yashodhara, the Buddha's wife, and about the Buddha himself. There are parts of the book where, because you've chosen the point of view of Yashodhara, the wife that's been left behind with the son, she's expressing anger towards the Buddha, and even at some points is saying out loud, I'd like to kill Siddhartha. I'd like to kill this person that's known as the Buddha. And also pointing to Yashodhara and other women's ideas about the Buddha's enlightenment and things he's kind of missing. There's a point where they're sitting around talking and they're angry about some things that have happened. And there's some discussion about something like the Gautama, the Buddha, has chosen to love many, and he's kind of unable to love one person one-on-one in a loving relationship. How are people receiving these ideas?
It's a lot of different things you just said that are some of the main questions that I had and that I hopefully portrayed some idea of what they may have felt or some thoughts and feelings, and making Siddhartha, who was known is known as the Buddha, more human and not so idolized and so perfect as some folks and some people who have made him into an idol, which is the last thing he ever wanted or talked about doing. So there's been the reactions have been mixed. For the most part, I'd say 90 to 95% of folks really appreciate the insight into the relationships that were connected to him and how his choices affected them and the choices they made after he left, and as time went on, how they healed their grief and loss from the pain of his leaving and the compassion they developed afterwards. But some people only see the feelings and emotions directed towards him as vilifying him, or a very small amount of fundamentalist Buddhists, which I didn't really think of because feel that way. They feel that he was in some ways like a perfect human being and everything he did was absolutely correct. And there was because in Northern California and in the States and North America in general, it's much more open, and I think there's not so much rigidity around Buddhism as there.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it's that old favorite, Bathrop Spears Broadsides. 5 minutes late, my apologies. Here's the September 10th edition, 2009, of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Stay tuned. Special guests from Sacramento, Fresno, and possibly San Francisco calling in on the old homeless issues, mostly about attempts to get survival space and safe ground to sleep. Stay tuned.
You don't have to own a gun to be a killer. You don't even have to think it's fun to be a killer. Just give a man a solid start. You break his soul and then you break his heart. Don't give him work and let his family starve. You'll get a killer. Now a little greed for a little more can make a killer. The landlord's knocking at your door, he's a killer. You can't pay the rent, you've just been told. You gotta leave, your apartment's been sold. So it's out on the street in the freezing cold. There's a killer. Take a homegrown bar with a homegrown smile and make a killer. No special human is needed to make a killer. Give him a uniform and a gun or two. You better shoot, boy, it's him or you. Aim straight, fella, and you'll get through. You've made a killer. Now you don't have to be alone to be a killer. You don't even have to leave your home to be a killer. You got your Congress, your Senate, and your President. All the rest of your government. Out of your dollar, give them 30 cents. You'll own a killer.
JD's a homemade product. That's what the Subway posters say. JD's a homemade product. That's what the Subway posters say. How can you be a homemade product when you haven't got a home anyway? Stand 8 on the corner till 2:30. We'll stand 8 on the corner till 2:30. One room ain't big enough for 7 other kids and me. Father, Mama waits for the welfare mail. Ain't got no father, Mama waits for the welfare mail. Now sister's down on Times Square, brother sits in jail. Sister work in Times Square, brother sits in jail. Yeah, sister's hustling on Times Square. My brother rots in jail. Mama's trying to make a living with a mop and pail. No heat in the pipes, it's down to 5 below. No heat in the pipes, it's down to 5 below. 7 kids in one room, where am I gonna go?
And that was A couple of cuts from the Broadside discs. First one was called To Be a Killer by Wes Houston. Wesley Houston, who wrote it and sang it. And the second one was New York J.D. Blues. Actually, we played about half of it. Sung by Pete Seeger. Words and music by Agnes Friesen. These are political folk protest songs from the 60s. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org, if you're listening on the computer. I'm Robert Norris. I'll be with you until 8, which point Uncle Dennis will be taking over and playing you 3 hours of music and updates on environmental concerns. I'm going to be talking, hopefully, with some folks calling in. Make sure we have the phone set up. Looks like we do, so that's good. There's some protests going on in Sacramento and in Eureka, actually, tonight. I got an email from Verbena up in Eureka. I probably have her name wrong. Maybe it's Verbena. She's part of, I believe it's called the People's Project up there. We've talked about that group of activists before. If you've been a long-time listener to this show, about 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, they set up an encampment downtown, again, like in most cities that criminalize survival behavior for homeless people, but then provide no place for them to go. It just makes actually surviving itself, being homeless, a crime. They set up their own encampment, and they actually got a lot of support from the community. There was quite a debate at the Arcata City Council up there. Arcata is a little town north of Eureka. And a lot of it was televised. You can go online, or you could a year and a half ago, and actually see and hear the televised debates at the Arcata City Council, unlike our city council, which you can, I guess you can go, if you get cable TV, you can watch them, but there's no rebroadcast, there's no live broadcast while it happens and no archive broadcast. I guess it's rebroadcast on community TV, which can be useful. And I'm also hoping for a call-in from Fresno activist Mike Rhodes, who was up in Sacramento for other reasons involving some, I think, court action around a prison lawsuit. I'm not quite sure. Maybe he'll talk about that when he calls in. And looking at the email here, we also are going to have a call from Jeremy Arndt, A-R-D-N-T. That's a name with only one vowel and lots of consonants. Jeremy is the guy who got busted for playing his didgeridoo on Pacific Avenue by our very own Officer Winston, who some people call Winchester Winston. He's so quick with his ticket book and some say hot-tempered on that issue. I'm pretty critical of Officer Winston. I think a lot of what he does is abusive, unnecessary, even illegal at points. But even if it's within the law, it is using laws to criminalize innocent and actually positive behavior and to attempt to destroy a culture and a community on the street with the notion that another community takes precedence, their dictates to sterilize the sidewalks and reserve them for commercial purposes is somehow the primary or the prime directive, which is not my view, and I hope it's not yours. So we got a lot of stuff coming in, hopefully tonight, and I'll be also listening for your phone calls. 427-3772 is the call-in number here, 427-3772, in case you want to call in with an update, a report of some kind. There's also some articles that have attracted my attention, and I've kind of done some researching on my own, which I find of interest. Had a long conversation today with City Council member and former Mayor Don Lane, or Gon Lame, as I call him. I got to say that Don was very accessible. He called me back quickly after I called him. I called him yesterday from the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting. The issue we talked about was the smoking ban, which is another issue that has caused some controversy in the papers and online, but not really that much public discussion or protest at this time. You can find some, back and forth on the what's called the topics, the Sentinel. If you go to the Santa Cruz Sentinel's website, you'll find the comment section after the article has some stuff. Anyway, I'll talk a little bit about, I had some criticism of the smoking ban, which is now, there's a smoking ban on Pacific Avenue, on Beach Street, and I believe on Westcliff Drive. I'm going to have to go directly to the, I try to find the actual ordinance. It has not gone into effect yet. It actually hasn't even passed a second reading, but since it was unanimously passed, it seems to be kind of a slam dunk. I'm not going to talk about it a lot, but I want to give this report from Don Lane, or actually just it's a report from me about my conversation with Lane. Smoking Pollution Control Ordinance, it's called. And the actual ordinance, I'm looking up the, going online to look up the ordinance, says it's there's an error, so we don't get it. Unfortunate. Let's try again. Let's try. It says it's working on it. Let's see if we actually got it. Nope, same error. Apparently their website is having some problems. Let's see if we can get the agenda report. Agenda report. Looks like the like a similar error. Yeah, not getting anywhere with the website. So I'll just kind of have to rely on my memory and on what I was told by my notes from the conversation I had with Lane a few hours ago. I'm concerned that, of course, banning smoking, and I'm no fan of smoking particularly, is a pretty serious intrusion on a person's personal private space. Now, it's true that if you smoke, you blow smoke and out into the world. So, no, that can't be denied. But if you're outside, it seems to me that there is some real controversy as to whether that's merely an annoyance to some other people or whether it has a toxic impact. And that is something I've talked about in the last show. I do a Sunday show as well in the morning, for those of you who are new. And the shows are archived at www.huffsantacruz.org. But in case you want to go back and review anything I've talked about before. But the fact is that there doesn't seem to be a lot of clear evidence of toxicity of secondhand smoke outdoors. I mean, indoors, there's considerable studies on it, although some smokers and some sources dispute that. There seems to be a significant body of evidence if you Google and go online. If you go online looking for secondhand smoke outdoors, you can't find much. Now, Lane referred me to the County Health Department. I have not yet contacted them. Hopefully I will tomorrow and try to get their update. But there was no documentation attached to the ordinance staff report or to the the agenda item, as far as I could see, certainly not online. I didn't get to the Tuesday City Council meeting, and I have not yet reviewed the tape, though I've been told about it and read some critique of it by activist Becky Johnson. But I don't think they provided any documentation about toxic effects of outdoor smoking. And when I asked Don Lane to give me that, the only thing he could really do, or the only thing he had for me this afternoon, had to do with a reference to, again, a county health person whose name is Andrea Silva. And he gave me her phone number, 454-4304, for those of you who want to check her out. He did clarify a few things. He said it's not only illegal to smoke on the sidewalks, but it's illegal to smoke in the street on Pacific Avenue and I believe also on Beach Street. And then it's also on, Westcliff Drive along there. I'm going to have to double-check those three streets. So it's elsewhere in town, elsewhere downtown, he says it's sidewalks where it's criminalized and not in the actual street. So in theory, I guess on a side street, you could step out into the street and maybe get hit by a car or, you know, I don't know, illegally stand in a parking lot. I guess parking lots may have been included, too, in the no smoking deal. And smoke. And, of course, if you're an employee, this gives you a special privilege. You can always do it. It's okay to pollute the air if you're an employee with the permission of your employer, which makes no sense at all in terms of the health concerns. I guess, you know, it's simply a special privilege for businesses to keep their employees happy, whereas everybody else is unhappy, or those who are smokers are unhappy, and those who are non-smokers probably may well be happier not to have the smoke around them. I mean, I don't want to, you know, that certainly may be the case. We talked about a number of things. I'd asked him whether, you know, whether they'd had an actual task force report, because he'd established a task force on smoking. Coonerty, Rotkin, and Lane, the three council members involved in that task force. And he said, no, there was no report. They were not charged with a report. They were just charged with cooking up an ordinance, and that's what they did. He did say that they held one public meeting that was publicly announced 72 hours in advance per the Brown Act, the state law, which the Open Meetings Act, which requires them to inform folks, that their interest groups were specifically invited to speak, and they included some that they thought would be negative, like restaurant and bar folks, including the 007, which Lane describes as an oasis of smokers' advocacy. But they didn't come. Someone from the bars came but didn't speak, he said. But he did not do any outreach on homeless people, homeless advocacy groups, who, I have no stats on this, but it's my impression that there's a much larger percentage of smokers among the homeless than there is among the housed community. And indeed, if you look at some of the chatter on the internet, you'll see that some people are pleased with this ordinance, or particularly pleased because it will, quote, drive away the bums and the homeless from the downtown area. Now, Lane, of course, denied that was the intention. But he didn't even get into what would have been a significant consideration 10 years ago, when the city was considering the downtown ordinances, the so-called unintended consequences. That's a nice phrase that Emily Riley, when she was on the city council, used to use a lot. That is to say, even if they don't intend to impact the homeless significantly, then if it has that effect, it's something that should be considered and looked at, and there should be some provision made for it, at least should be taken into account. Apparently, according to Lane, it was not taken into account at all. Or at least there was nobody invited from that group, and nobody spoke in that group at the task force meeting, which I'm not quite sure when it happened. He didn't know the date, but he claimed they had one public meeting. He also gave me a piece of interesting information. He said the Seaside Company has banned smoking from the boardwalk for the last 10 years. And this meant that even though the city council did no research on tourism and the impact on tourism and business coming to the city by having a smoking ban, that they could look at the example of the Seaside Company and the boardwalk, which apparently, according to Lane, there was no economic impact on the boardwalk. They had no problem with this. In fact, they felt it had a positive impact. Now, in terms of stats, none of those were presented, of course. I don't know whether business has improved on the boardwalk. I haven't seen the figures about any of that, nor did Lane offer them, nor even did I ask about them. But I'm thinking about them now as I'm speaking to you. They did contact Davis and Berkeley, according to Councilmember Lane. And when asked about extra costs, Lane kind of, I don't say he necessarily fudged, but he focused only on the issue of whether they had to add personnel to do additional enforcement, and they said no, so therefore he kind of said there's no additional cost. But I said, well, writing tickets, you know, and taking people to court and taking up police time, existing police time, is an additional cost in time. You know, did you look at how many tickets were issued? Did you get any stats from the other cities about that? Find out anything of that sort? And he said no. He also was unclear about the current rules on smoking, because we do not have the new law yet. That'll happen a month from the next council meeting if it's passed again in a second reading, which it's almost certain it will be. what is the current situation? Well, if you go down, for example, to New Leaf Market, you'll see signs that say, please no smoking within 20 feet. And there are big no smoking signs around businesses. And Lane, I said, you know, people, cops have been giving tickets to people for smoking downtown already. And actually, even before this ordinance was even brought up. So what's the current situation? And I've complained to Sentinel, and by not reporting it, this is the practice. There seems to be an existing de facto ordinance in place even now. What's the reason for the need for the intensification? He was unaware of any ordinance in place, although he said there was a 20-foot rule that applied to public buildings as state law. So I didn't get much from him on that. There was no discussion, he said, with the police department about how the current enforcement of smoking laws is going, you know, whether they are, in fact, you know, enforcing what appears to be a non-existent law or a state law that should only apply to public buildings or whatever they're doing, because Officer Winston is downtown with his ticket book, and we have heard accounts of tickets for smoking. Can't find an ordinance on the books that specifically makes it illegal to smoke within 20 feet of a building when it's posted downtown, a non-public building, a business. But I do know that Parks and Rec's director, Dinette Shoemaker, banned smoking throughout San Lorenzo Park and Grant Street Park, I believe, which was regarded by many of us as an errant anti-homeless measure designed to, you know, kind of provoked by people like Chief Ranger John Wallace, who seemed to want nothing more than to drive homeless people out of the public parks, or at least a certain kind of homeless people that he doesn't like. And those may be people who drink beer. Who knows? You know, those may be people who hang out. They may be people who look scruffy. They're people, nonetheless. So they have their right to be in public spaces. They need to do what they do, or they choose to do what they do. And it may offend the sight of some other people, but they do not have houses to hide in or to conceal themselves in or to have privacy in, like the rest of us do. There was a speaker at the Santa Cruz City Council on Tuesday night, Scott Graham, who talked about how if you're concerned about health effects of smoke downtown, it seems a little hypocritical to go after smoking but ignore vehicles. And because he said if years ago at City Council when they smoked, the room was full of smoke and nobody died, but if he pumped in, you know, hooked his car up and pumped in exhaust for 10 minutes, I don't know about 10 minutes, but after a certain period of time, you get a lot of, you get some fatalities and some sickness, so it's much worse. And again, this goes to the whole issue, you know, of the impact of outdoors secondhand smoke or even indoors secondhand smoke compared to, let's say, cars. And I did point out in the last show that I read a rather counterintuitive study which said that one study of outdoor secondhand smoke said something to the effect that it was more toxic than automobile fumes in terms of a particular particulate analysis of stuff in the air. But I didn't see any other study, and it seemed both counterintuitive. You know, what the hell is this all about? It seems strange. And there wasn't much confirmation of it, so I haven't yet really come to any clear conclusions based on that study. But Lane's response to Graham's, you know, the cars are much more toxic, is that he didn't say it, but he was thinking of saying to Graham, well, we have already banned cars from the sidewalks of Pacific Avenue, and similarly, we're banning smoking from the sidewalks of Pacific Avenue. Of course, this is disingenuous because he also agreed that they're banning smoking from the street, but they're not banning cars from the street on Pacific Avenue, and I guess Beach Street, and I guess I'm thinking maybe Westcliff. Again, I don't have the ordinance in front of me. Pueblo, Colorado, he said, has banned the smoking citywide with positive health impacts, according to him, which I found that was, I guess, his response to my concern that there's no evidence of secondhand smoking outdoors. There's very little evidence that it's toxic or not toxic, for that matter. There's not much evidence of it at all. He noted that only about 40 people came to the audience. Or at the task force meeting, only 25 to 30 people came. 12 spoke. It was scheduled in the afternoon from 3 to 5. He's going to send me notes on it. So I don't have a lot of new information. I've just given you what I've got from Councilmember Don Lane. If you want more from him, you can call his number. In fact, the entire city council can be reached at 420-5020, 420-5020. And I'm still of the opinion that actually, personally pleased as I am to have people not smoking in my area, I just think it's a very bad idea to tell people that you're not going to smoke on penalty of an arrest or a citation. Instead of simply doing something like approaching them and saying, you know, she has asthma, can I get you to move your cigarette? I think 99 times out of 100 you will get people to do that. But this is an attempt to, you know, preempt all this and get people to kind of operate on a fear basis, on a kind of an obedience basis that has little to do with the personal preferences or the needs of people in the area. If nobody's around, there shouldn't be any problem lighting up a cigarette. You know, I mean, it's just not that toxic to other people outside, as far as I can see, compared to, I'd probably say even compared to automobile exhaust. I'd say that, you know, just as an intuitive statement rather than one backed up by any actual evidence. Now, last time I was on the air, I played I was concerned about the crackdown on street performers, some of it actually illegal, in which police are advising performers they can't be where they are, even though the law states that that's not true, or if you look at the law, that there's no such ban on the places where they're standing. Currently, the law bans people who are musicians from having a display device, which is to say an open guitar case seeking funds or a cup or a table within 10 feet of a lot of different items, whether it's a building or a kiosk. It really severely cuts down on the amount of usable space, particularly when they're putting in more benches. And they've added this 10 feet from a bench forbidden zone for street performers who have open cases. But we're going to be hearing now from a guy who didn't have an open case. And I think I played this before, but I think it's worth playing again. This is Robert Fasser, who is also, I believe, called Robert Blindbear. He's an older guy. He's got a beard. He's kind of looks like a hermit out of the hills. Maybe I do the same. I don't know. And he's a very mild-mannered guy. And he's apparently getting harassed a lot. And not only are we going to play this account, which is from a couple weeks ago, but I talked to him yesterday, and he's continued to receive harassment from police officers for performing. People are allowed to perform, musicians are allowed to perform anywhere on the sidewalk, period, if they don't have a display device. And performing is not panhandling, so you don't have to be 14 feet away from a building, kiosk, crosswalk, statue, bench, and name it. There's a somewhat slightly larger area where you're supposedly allowed to perform. But the police apparently seem to be taking it into their heads to constrict this even further. And this is a matter of some concern to me, because as I've said before on this show, this kind of action by the police seems often to, well, of course, it impacts performers, and we're going to hear from a performer at 7 calling in, perhaps, Jeremy Arendt. Or Ardent, or however he pronounces his name, about how he was hassled on it for his didgeridoo playing by Officer Winston. But it also may foreshadow and suggest upcoming tighter laws, which are sort of done ex post facto to justify police misconduct, actually, that... Instead of dealing with police harassment and selective enforcement, as was widely complained about in the summer of 2002, the city council disbanded the Citizens Police Review Board and passed harsher laws that essentially, after the fact, legalized what the police had been doing. Not that there was any danger of them being significantly held accountable, either politically or judicially, for what they were doing. But there was, when they actually held some hearings, when the city council made the sort of mistake of actually having open hearings independent of the city council meeting, they got testimony that the main issues of concern were selective enforcement and police harassment, not people performing music at bad places and bad times. We have a caller. Hello there. You're on Free Radio.
Hi, this is Becky Johnson calling in.
Hey, Becky. How you doing?
I'm good. I wanted to go back a little bit to your previous topic about the smoking ban.
Okay.
I just came... Well, I found that the whole impetus for this was that a report from the American Lung Association, the American Cancer Society, two nonprofit organizations that issued a report card for the city of Santa Cruz about our smoking policies. Kind of reminds me a little bit of when we had the National Law Center and Homelessness and Poverty. They issued their report card, and they determined that Santa Cruz was one of the meanest cities in the country. There's such a different response. The meanest cities, of course, the city council just went out of their way to discredit anyone who had suggested that the city qualified for that designation.
What was the group again that gave the bad smoking report?
Two groups, the American Lung Association and the American Cancer Society.
And
here's something interesting. Both of these, you know, they issued their report card. Why should we care? The American Lung Association, along with the American Cancer Society, are two of the most poorly rated charities. American Cancer Society only uses 9 cents on the dollar for their mission. The rest is spent on overhead and bloated payroll.
Well, let me ask you. Let me ask you.
They pay their employees very well.
Let me ask you, Becky. Do we know? I mean, that's certainly a consideration about whether I would donate to those organizations. But my question would be: do we have any evidence about how accurate or inaccurate their figures are on other issues? I mean, are they? Because these are societies that, for one reason or another, you know, have some interest in these issues. Maybe they have just interest in making money off these issues. For who knows, but. They also, presumably, have been issuing reports on this kind of stuff. Are there reports in question? Do you have any sense of the viability or the reliability of their reports on other subjects or on this subject previous times?
Well, you know, I've been looking, doing some research on secondhand smoke, and I found it very, very difficult to determine whether secondhand smoke or some combination of other factors contributed to a person's disease.
You mean secondhand smoke indoors or secondhand smoke outdoors?
Anywhere,
are you drawing a distinction?
Anywhere. Compared to a primary smoker who's, you know, the person who's addicted to tobacco or nicotine and they're smoking primarily, there's a very well-documented correlation between the rate of smoking and different lung diseases.
Does the American Lung Association and the American Cancer Society have anything to say about secondhand smoke outdoors? Do we know? Have you read anything about that? Because that's the issue. We're not talking this. I mean, there are some parts of this bill that I guess refer to indoors.
I found that same study that you found from Colorado, which was just, it was one study. It was done where it was the idea that people tend to go out in one small area, maybe by the dumpster, and a whole bunch of people on break might be four or five people smoking a cigarette at the same time. And they were kind of measuring the smoke coming in through a nearby window versus when a car drove by. And they rated that the tobacco smoke has a higher carbon monoxide level than car exhaust does.
Right, but you're not really answering my question, which is, do you know if these two societies came up with any studies about outdoor secondhand smoke?
I haven't looked at extensively at what what they were suggesting.
I mean, all I know is when I talked to Lane, who is one of the originators of this law, he said he had no, there was no clarity for him as to whether particularly outdoor secondhand smoke was regarded as, you know, unusually toxic compared with indoors. I mean, no, I may disagree with you. I may think that secondhand smoke indoors actually, you know, is deleterious. That has been, most studies I've seen, I've looked over some of those studies, seem to indicate that it is. And the only ones that don't are funded by the tobacco industry, which doesn't impress me
much.
Yeah,
well, you're talking about people who have maybe a mate who smokes and they've been exposed to it for years
right,
and years.
Right, 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 for sure, for sure.
And, you know, certainly we've had workplaces that where people don't have the option of leaving.
Yeah, this is coming up next, I guess, Tuesday after next at City Council. But, of course, it's pretty much of a slam dunk. And I know that you've been writing about it. How can people access your writing if they want to read more about your thoughts on this?
Kind of a analysis about, you know, how undemocratic this whole process has been. I'm working on an article, so I'll be posting that on my blog in the next couple of days.
And how do we access your blog?
Well, it's Becky Johnson, One Woman Talking. You could Google for just Becky Johnson, One Woman Talking, and it'll come up. But the exact address is www.beckyjohnsononewomantalking.blogspot.com.
Any other subjects? I know that you're,
you're an
occasional writer on homeless topics.
Before we move on, I have one more point I wanted to make.
Okay, go ahead. Try to sum it up.
Scott Graham and one other speaker at the city council meeting compared car exhaust.
Yeah, I've talked about that.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I did some research on that. The volume of smoke produced by a single cigarette is 3,500 cc's or 3.5 liters of smoke. A car, a single gallon of gas burned in a car in Santa Cruz produces 1,402 liters of air pollution. Now, a car, it's most of its carbon dioxide and water vapor, but it also contains carbon monoxide, benzene, particulate matter, and formaldehyde.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, a lot of those ingredients are in the cigarette smoke as well. So, let's see.
Yeah. Well, I'm surprised that this hasn't been an issue. It probably was an issue in other cities where this ban was considered, but I don't have any information on what's more toxic. I mean, I understand intuitively you'd think, well, you know, all that car exhaust should be causing more problems, and maybe we're not getting the right reports because of, you know, the car lobby or the merchants who want the cars to come downtown or whatever. But the problem is we don't have the studies to really tell what's going on. That's one of the reasons I'm, you know, skeptical about this law. So any other reports on, you know, other issues that you've been following? I know that you've been working on the closing of the Poganip, on the impact of the homeless, and that, of course, is the focus of our show here. I'm sorry? Hello?
If you burned an entire ounce of tobacco, that would be equivalent to 1/100th of a gallon of gasoline.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And most cigarette smokers, you know, there's a lot less than an ounce.
I'd like to see some clinical trials or some real. I don't understand where the studies are. So I appreciate the seemingly intuitive information. Again, is there anything?
No, this wasn't intuitive.
Is there any?
I
want to move on from. I want to move on from the subject and to other subjects if I can.
Know,
you know, I really.
So,
Becky,
you know, I came up with some hard facts.
Right.
On that.
Right. Well. Yeah, you know, in terms of the amount of, you know, material that goes out. But any other subjects? I'm going to move on to other.
Well, of course, we've got a couple others. Of course, the Poganip closing, supposedly due to high fire danger. But ironically, they didn't close the park when it really was like a red flag warning. The park stayed open. And then after the temperature dropped considerably and the humidity was way up, you know, still tinder dry out there, but not the fire danger, that's when we get Ranger Wallace announcing that the sections where the most of the homeless encampments are, and they're where they are for a reason. They're far away from hiking trails, They're accessed from the railroad tracks often, and they're just some of the most isolated areas of the Poganip Park. This is where Ranger Wallace declared them closed to fire danger, and then had this ridiculous thing that they're cooking heroin out there on this place they just discovered called Heroin Hill. I think it's just bogus. Heroin Hill certainly has been in a small area of the Poganip for a very, very long time. Nothing new. I don't know what they're talking about cooking heroin. Methamphetamine you cook up in batches, and it's highly flammable and highly dangerous to anyone who's nearby. But heroin, at least when people purchase it, the only cooking they do is they might hold a match under a spoon and then they use the hypodermic needle to withdraw up the drug just prior to injection. But that's a method that heroin users have been using for, you know, 100 years or something. It's not the sudden emergency. So now what happens, Ranger Wallace can just go up and he can cite anyone for being there. They don't have to catch him camping. They don't have to find them after hours.
The other thing I found out regarding camping
and they've got shelters for the displaced people.
Yeah, I know. We've talked about that too. The other thing that I've found out about Ranger Wallace is, about the whole Parks and Rec camping, anti-homeless camping ticket stuff is, I think he sent me an email suggesting that Parks and Rec tickets are not a part of the monthly report, so we can't really judge how much harassment is happening for people who are sleeping outside but have no legal place to go, which is the case for everybody tonight. There's no emergency walk-in shelter, according to the authoritative Doug Loisel, who's the head of the Homeless Service Center, the executive director. And I talked to Lane today. He said, well, Parks and Rec figures have been added to, or there's an additional page, and they're available online. I told him I couldn't find them, he's going to go take a look. Have you been able to find Parks and Rec figures online?
I haven't. They're usually not included in this report, which, and you can see by the areas, West, Beach, Central, Downtown, East, that those are just the beats for the Santa Cruz Police Department.
Well, he says there's a Santa Cruz Police Department page, and the page that follows is Parks and Rec. So I'm still looking for it. I asked him to look for it. I think we got cut off in that phone conversation. But I appreciate the update, Becky. I'm going to roll, unless there's some final thing you want to say.
I can't resist a little talk about Ryan Coonerty, my favorite.
Council Member Coonerty of the Bookshop Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm. I heard a rumor that Ryan is adamant that his Wikipedia page only reflects the things that he would want in a resume if he were looking for a job. And I remember all kinds of things about the shenanigans, about the do-it-yourself parade and the spies and all kinds of things that directly involved Ryan Coonerty were on his Wikipedia page. I went and logged on today, and they're all gone. It's all been sanitized.
Really?
It's just all fluffy puff pieces about Ryan Coonerty. So,
that's interesting. You know, I know that there was a lot of stuff that was regarded as controversial, but it hadn't been eliminated, and I'm kind of surprised that that's the case. I mean, it was disputed, I guess some would say, because Coonerty disputed it. But I'm
everything's
surprised.
Been removed, as though it never happened.
Wow, I see a picture of him here. I've gone to the page, and looks like there ain't much left on the page. Wow. Boy, I don't know. Maybe he's got an in with maybe his organization, Santa Cruz Next, has some ringers in the Wikipedia. Who knows? Anyway, thank you, Becky.
He's a lawyer. He can threaten lawsuits.
I guess, yeah, sure. Thank you for calling in.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. And you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. Name of the show, Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Call-in number is 427-3772, 427-3772. FRSC. Boy, I wish I had saved that Wikipedia page. Maybe I have. Let's see here. Let me take a look here. Let's see here. No, there's nothing there. I guess, you know, Becky's right. It's, I mean, there's always a... Interesting. Wow. So, I'm going to play a little bit now from this interview I was telling you about earlier, which is a street performer describing his experiences, and he really tries to be very nice about how the police have treated him, too nice as far as I'm concerned. And I think those of you who listen to my show may have heard part of this interview before, if not the whole thing, but let's begin with it anyway, because at 7 I'm expecting a call from the didgeridoo man, Jeremy, and we'll get to kind of, we'll segue into that with this.
Robert, what's happening?
Good. Any reports from the street?
Nothing right now. I was approached by a policeman today and told that I couldn't play on Pacific Avenue, not on this block or the next block, because it was there were statutes against every single location on the street.
That's not true.
I don't know if that's true or not, but that is what he told me.
And is Officer Winston told you this?
I didn't know. I didn't catch the officer's name. He just came up and said, you can't play here because you're 14 feet from a telephone and you're 14 feet from a trash can. I said, well, what if I move down here a little ways? And he went down the list of every single location on this street and said, and you can't play, there's no place on this street that you can actually play because every single spot has some type of a statute against it.
If you see the officer again, I'd like to know, because this is exactly his name, because that's exactly what the city council said would not happen. They assured us there was adequate space for performers. He's wrong. It's 10 feet for a display device. It's 0 feet if you don't have a guitar case open. You're just playing because, like, you know, like Dennis's Uncle Dennis is doing over there, Dennis the Bard, you can play wherever you want. But if you have a case open, then you have to be 10 feet from various things. But, I mean, there's always, like, this set of squares right here that we're standing in is 10 feet from all these different things. It's not 14 feet. 14 feet has to do with panhandling. And playing for music is not, for a donation, if you're doing a performance, is not panhandling.
Oh, well.
So there.
I had a guitar case open. You know,
it's a display device.
Yeah, I consider it to be, if you want to have fun when you're playing, you know, you have to have some, you know, method, you know, for people to express their appreciation. I play, you know, with my guitar case open, so that if anyone wants to, they can drop some money into it if they care to. I'm not really that concerned about the money. I'm more interested in playing, and that's, you know, what I expressed to the officer. You know, as well, you know, if I can't play here, it really doesn't bother me 100%, because, you know, I'm not playing because I'm, you know, trying to take over any particular spot or even make any money. I'm just playing because I like to play.
What time of day did this happen?
I think it was approaching evening. I think it was about 7 o'clock p.m.
3 hours ago?
I guess so, yeah. That would have been right if this was the time.
It wasn't... Was it a short officer who spoke to you?
He was medium sized. He was very polite. I'm not saying, you know, that he was offensive or anything, but he did.
It's very offensive when he gives you misinformation and drives you out of the public spaces. That's very offensive to me.
It's offensive to me if that's the case.
That is the case.
But
I'll show you the code if you want to have it. in my back pocket.
As far as playing on Pacific Avenue, I have played on Pacific Avenue a number of times, and all the officer did was make me do what I wanted to do anyway, because I don't particularly like being abused and ridiculed, and that's the general atmosphere of this street. When I play my guitar in the street, it's almost like I was attempting to take over a hostile territory. There's just absolutely no cooperation. The audience is, it seems like they're completely in opposition. The only thing they're apparently concerned with is the money in their pockets and going someplace to buy something. You know, which is fine with me. Some people don't have any money. I don't care if they give me any donations or not, but it does seem to be a very cold and hostile atmosphere on Pacific Avenue for some reason, at least at this time. I'm not sure if it's that case every single day, but the last couple of weeks it has appeared that way to me.
Thank you.
It might have something to do with the fire.
Thank you, Robert. We've been talking with
Robert Facer.
Thank you, Robert. So we have Officer Winston coming up the street with two individuals in handcuffs.
Well, they didn't do this, did they?
I didn't do that.
You didn't do this?
No.
You didn't do that?
Absolutely.
No, I told you I saw the video.
I can't tell that.
I
didn't do that. That looks like crazy.
Officer Winston is taking in two suspects for, looks like, graffiti. All right, please, get in touch. Call the station. And actually, it wasn't graffiti. This was the day, about 3 weeks ago, you may remember, when there was chalk all over the sidewalk, many, many different kind of messages, erasable chalk. Admittedly, more chalk than I usually see on the sidewalk, or that I would do on the sidewalk. But it wasn't graffiti, certainly in the sense that graffiti is a permanent destructive impact, whereas chalk washes away to the sea and is, frankly, as far as I'm concerned, it's a free speech activity. It may not be something that everybody likes, but it's something that I think people should be allowed to do, and we have done it traditionally in Santa Cruz prior to about 2002, when the city council decided they were going to start cracking down on political protesters as well. And actually, our last caller, Becky Johnson, was arrested, taken to jail and held on bail for chalking a slogan against the sleeping ban along the curb of the street, which is, I think they eventually dropped that charge, although they went after her for something else, chalking on the sidewalk. Ironically, it's illegal to chalk on the sidewalk, but it's not illegal to chalk in the street. I was initially ticketed for chalking in the street, and the ticket was dismissed. I think I wrote "End the War in Iraq," fully aware that the police were claiming it was illegal on the sidewalk, but they didn't have an ordinance that they could try to pull out of their hat for the street. I don't think they have it. Again, these two suspects, who I think Officer Winston had in handcuffs, he claimed he had a video of them. I believe I spoke to them later. And they said that there was no charges against them for chalking. There was a charge instead for drunk in public, and the drunk in public charge, which is becoming a way of sort of, well, that's why they're taking them in. That's okay. You're not supposed to be amenable, or should we say vulnerable, to a drunk in public charge unless you can't take care of yourself, like you're staggering drunk, likely to hurt yourself. You know, being tipsy or high or intoxicated is not sufficient for drunk in public. And it becomes a matter of abusive officer discretion. They can just go after somebody who has alcohol in their breath because they want to, dump them in the drunk tank. They don't have to give them a breathalyzer test, and they don't. And I heard this complaint most recently yesterday at the drum circle. I'll be playing that tape probably on Sunday when I come back and do a morning show. Police just choose to go after folks based upon, it seems, if not arbitrary criteria, even criteria that are motivated by some sort of personal hostility, or if you don't show adequate respect for the police, this becomes an issue, or can be. I mean, I'm to some extent speculating, but I see what I regard as really extremely overzealous enforcement downtown, and of course enforcement of laws that are themselves abusive violations of people's basic right to use public spaces for innocent behavior that may not please everybody, but that is a part of the general scene and the rights that we should have in our society.
Arresting those people for chalking?
Apparently so. It looks like Alfresco's has gotten a number of chalk graffiti. Street kid rule. And then there's some scratchy stuff you can't really read.
And again, I use the word graffiti just to indicate chalking. Graffiti, again, is to me something much more permanent. Painting, spraying, etching, scratching. Something that's hard to remove. Chalking is not hard to remove at all.
He says he had a video of it?
That's what Officer Winston said. But again, Officer Winston is... Well, if he did, perhaps he did. We'll have to see about that.
And we have a caller. Hi there, caller.
Good, how are you?
And what's your name, caller?
My name is Jeremy. I've been talking with Robert about a ticket I got for playing music in Santa Cruz.
Are you the infamous Jeremy of the didgeridoo fame, Jeremy?
Yes, sir.
You're the one, eh?
I can barely hear what you're saying.
You can't hear me. Hang on, let me see if I can turn things up here. Is that better? Is that better?
No.
Is that better?
Nope.
How about that?
That's better.
Okay, well, I hope I'm not blasting everybody's ears out. And I hope
on the radio.
Yeah. All right, well, let's see what we can do here. So I know, Jeremy, you sent me a lengthy email describing what happened, what took place between you and Officer Winston. You want to run by me what happened when you came to Santa Cruz?
Okay. Well, I've been traveling for a while this summer playing music. And I rolled into Santa Cruz probably about 2.5 weeks ago now, and went downtown to play music. I was told Santa Cruz is a great place to play music in the streets, and that's one of my preferred venues to play for people. So I was playing downtown, and Officer Winston came up to me and pretty much told me right away that there's nowhere in town that I could play.
Nowhere
so,
in town? Hold it. Nowhere in town? Nowhere on the avenue?
Nowhere on Pacific Avenue.
Now, describe exactly what you were doing when he came up to you. How long is your instrument?
How long is what?
How long is your instrument that you were playing?
I'd say it's about 5 feet long.
Okay.
And at this point, this is when I just got into town. So I was sitting on the bench playing.
Where were you?
I was on Pacific and, I don't have my writing down.
What was the nearby building or what nearby business, you know?
It was right, I do know it was right across from, I was literally 15 feet from one of the designated areas in town that you're allowed to play.
Was this near a green kiosk on the sidewalk or a New Leaf or?
The Green Kiosk is actually where I got my ticket. The Green Cafe is 1126 Pacific.
Okay.
When I was here, though, he came up and he told me, he's like, we pretty much, there's the law is set up so there's nowhere you can play downtown. He didn't explain it any further than that. And so I packed up and I was going to go out to the wharf and to the beach like he asked me to without any problem. And as I was packing up, Fran from the local hospitality crew stopped by and introduced herself, and she gave me a pamphlet explaining the rules for street musicians and pretty much telling me that they enjoy street musicians in Santa Cruz and that I was welcome there. And she told me the rules, and they explained to me that I was only 15 feet away from one of the designated zones, so I played there. And I played there for about an hour before getting up and moving, because the rule says that you have to move every hour.
Right. If there's a complaint, that's a rule we don't.
Yeah. So, and the pamphlet said I had to be 10 feet away from buildings, 10 feet away from sculptures, 10 feet away from ATMs.
Right.
Street cafes.
Leaving you very little place to play, but there are still some places.
Yeah, so I was wandering around, and this time I sat down, and I just so happened to sit down next to a sculpture, and I didn't realize it.
Next to a what?
A sculpture. And I didn't realize that a sculpture wasn't on there. I had just read bench, you know, buildings, and I was and intersections and all that. And I was,
so you were blocking
looking, and I said,
"Blocking
sculpture.
The public view of a sculpture." This is disgraceful, Jeremy. Go ahead.
Yes. Yeah, very, very disgraceful.
I feel very. I don't know if I should allow you to continue your story, but I guess I will. Go
ahead. So, after I played there, Officer Winston came by again, and he told me, he's like, "You can't play by the sculpture." And I said that I got this pamphlet that explains the rules, and he showed me right in there where the sculptures were. So I was in the wrong there, and I packed up, and I apologized to him. And
he didn't give you a ticket.
No, he didn't give me a ticket.
Okay, good.
So right where I was at, I looked across the street, and there's a spot, and it's 1126 Pacific. There's a little cafe there. And about 20 feet out from the cafe entrance, there's a little square planter box around a tree. And so I sat there. There was a directory sign that was over 15 feet away. I was at least 20 feet away from the building entrances. I was a good number of feet away from a green street cafe that's there with a little surrounding patio area to eat. And there's an ATM machine.
You had isolated yourself from all the areas where it was, of course, you know, we know very dangerous to the public health for you to play, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, I might blow out their eardrums or...
Yeah, you might have caused consternation or actually improved the business in that area, actually.
Yeah, or scared those kids that like to dance to the music, and the old lady that stopped and I played the didgeridoo at her, and she closed her eyes and just sat there for some moments and a little moment of peace in her day, and she thanked me and was very grateful for her experience there. And that was sitting in that exact spot. And I was definitely 10 feet away from the ATM. There was an ATM that was quite a ways away. And along comes Officer Winston again. And this time, no hesitation, pulls out the ticket as I, you know, plead to...
Uh-oh, I think we lost you. I think we've been talking with Jeremy, who is describing his adventures with Officer Winston as he tries to play the didgeridoo downtown. And I think he's going to be calling right back. Sounds like he got cut off. While we're waiting for him, what I'm going to do is I'm going to look up his email, because he did send me a rather extensive email description of what went down. Although, here he is again, probably, so let's pick him up. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Is this you, Jeremy?
No, Robert, your voice has been totally unclear on the radio, and I can hardly hear you on the phone. Can't hear you at all on the radio.
I think I understand why.
There you go. Yeah, he was blasting, and we couldn't even hear you asking.
I'm sorry. I apologize to all the people out there who are wondering what the hell is going on. Thank you for calling in on that issue.
Yeah, and he'll probably call you back, so I'm going to get off.
Sounds good.
Okay, bye.
You got to make sure you have the right dials turned up in the studio, and if if you don't, then nobody hears you. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org, and hopefully, Jeremy, keep trying. If you're listening to the show, call back, and you know you might not have been able to get in because of that last caller who's trying to advise us that you know you got to be able to hear both the host and the guest, which is you know necessary for an audible and sensible and intelligible program. So let's hope that that's now going to happen. And while we're waiting, as I said, I'm going to read Jeremy's account that he originally sent me about this, because it at least part of the account that kind of subsequently follows. I keep getting a little problem here. I'll find it. Let's see. And I think, I think we may have found the right email. Now let's see what we can get to it. The question is, you know, what can somebody do in Jeremy's situation? It sounds like the ultimate ticket that he got from Officer Winston, we're going into a lot of technicalities, but the real issue seems to be harassing street performers when no one is complaining. first of all. Although even if people are complaining, there should be, a real clearly established set of rights on both sides. And there actually was for 20 years in the so-called street performers' voluntary guidelines, where street performers would sort of, pay some attention and just do a neighborly respect for people. Maybe they're tired of hearing the same tune for an hour and then move on after an hour. Not because it was required by the law, but because it was just common courtesy. And there are some circumstances where people wouldn't move on because, maybe they were doing a protest or maybe there was some other consideration. In that case, if it was really abusive, then the other laws could be used, such as unreasonable noise, although there's an issue with the unreasonable noise law, too, which I've talked about in the past. The problem that Jeremy ran into on the third encounter with Officer Winston, I'm looking at his email, is that he was sitting within 50 feet of a change-making machine, in this case an ATM machine. And it's actually legal to sit within 50 feet if you're not seated on the sidewalk. If you bring your own chair, it's okay. If you're sitting on a public bench, it's okay. It's not actually illegal to play music within 50 feet of an ATM. It's illegal to sit down on the sidewalk. Again, this is designed to criminalize homeless people who try to take up spaces. They don't have the money to sit in sidewalk cafes. They can't bring their own chairs. Benches are being taken away like it's going out of style. There are actually relatively few benches on Pacific Avenue now compared to, let's say, the original downtown Vision Santa Cruz plan compared to the mid-90s. Benches are removed at the whim of merchants and bureaucrats in the, I don't know whether it's the Public Works or the Parks and Rec or the Police Department, but staff inside without any kind of public hearing, and they leave no paper trail. I've asked for an accounting of the benches that were removed, why they were removed, when they were removed, and I get the word from Steve Hammack of the Parks and Rec Department, we have no record of any of this. I'm so sorry. Which, of course, it's either a lie or an example of records being destroyed. I mean, that's my interpretation about what seems to me must be the case. In any case, Jeremy got a ticket for sitting down on the sidewalk within 50 feet of a change-making machine. He had been trying to accommodate, as a newcomer, Officer Winston's vigilant move along this performer. After first getting misinformation from Winston that he couldn't play anywhere in town, apparently it may have antagonized Officer Winston because he was pointing out, well, the pamphlet says, and the yellow jacket, that's what I call the hosts, the bumblebees, characters who walk around in their yellow and black jackets, says, I can play at certain spots. And so Officer Winston was shown to be giving misinformation. Maybe Officer Winston didn't like that idea, so maybe he was punishing, who knows, Jeremy for this. But you might say, well, technically he's right. He can give a ticket to someone for sitting within 50 feet of an ATM machine. It's interesting. We've never taken these laws to a higher court to determine their constitutionality. Not that I have a lot of confidence in our higher courts, but in terms of obvious special interest legislation that gives the police a blank check and allows for massive selective enforcement and denies the community access to the commons, the common areas that we should all be able to use for innocent behavior, it's outrageous what we've got here in terms of the codes for downtown Santa Cruz. And unusual in any city of our size, a beachfront town, although there is, I have to acknowledge, an attack on homeless people throughout the country, and that is, in fact, what we're seeing here now. For those of you who have gotten citations, for those of you who have seen citations happen, please give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. You can call now to the air if you have some accounts you want to give, 427-3772. It looks like Jeremy either used up all his money on the card or maybe tried to call back and got discouraged. I do appreciate his calling in. I'm sorry we haven't been able to get more information from him, although he really has done some pretty extensive emailing to me, and I'm going to try to put together something to put online. This course story that he's given, his own account, is going to be online. And it is online, that is to say, as a radio show. All these shows are archived at www.huffsantacruz.org. So here's what he says. As I sat there explaining to Officer Winston, this is Jeremy's email, the occurrences of the day and how I got a hold of the pamphlet, he sat there etching my name into the depths of Santa Cruz's legal system, a ticket for playing music. What a crock. I couldn't believe it. After all the cities I have played in, the response I was getting from the Santa Cruz locals on my didgeridoo, turns out the law is in Santa Cruz is 50 feet from ATM machines when the pamphlet says only 10 feet. It's actually true that you can set up a display device within 10 feet of an ATM, but you can't sit on the sidewalk. You have to bring your own chair. So it's all these little frills and spills and, you know, the fine print, again, designed to make you just look at the officer and say, tell me what to do, I'll do it, whatever you tell me. And, of course, Winston's first message was, nowhere can you play, which was a false message. It was a lie. So if we're getting an accurate account from Jeremy, we're learning that there is at least one individual in the police department who's trying to drive away street performers, or who is at least doing so on this occasion, and I think a number of other occasions we've heard. You heard an account from Robert Fazer earlier. I don't know if that was Officer Winston or somebody else, but it's bad to get bad information, and it's even worse when you have to deal with the tickets. The tickets, again, I think it was a $250-some ticket that Jeremy is facing. he continues, I busted out my handy-dandy tape measure, and my spot at 1126 Pacific Avenue was right on the cusp of 50 feet, debatable that I was outside legal limits. So my next couple of days were spent playing music elsewhere, fearing another backlash from the military police force, and I settled into playing on the boardwalk and wharf, where I was received very well by laughing adults, dancing children, spinning hippies, you name it. I saw it there in Santa Cruz, so why am I writing this letter? Well, I was playing one morning for my own pleasure on the cliffs to the north of the town when a man named John, a Santa Cruz local, stopped to talk after seeing me play by the boardwalk the previous night. We got to talking about my visit in Santa Cruz and my experiences. When the word got out about the ticket, he sent me your way, as he sent to Huff. I'm trying to act as a sort of a rep for Huff on this. He said that you've been fighting for the homeless and other instances like my own for about 20 years in Santa Cruz. He wants to know about resources. And did I mention there were many other street performers throughout the downtown during my stay? None that I ever saw were harassed by the local police force. Do they just like to pick on the new guys in town? Oh, well, at least I got a nice song out of it on my acoustic guitar, although an expensive one. And again, I'll keep you updated on this case. And Jeremy, if you're not able to get in again, I really apologize for the problems we're having here at the station. I think you got cut off through some other problem, but the problem we had was that I was speaking and people were having trouble hearing, and hopefully we've resolved that problem now. 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, the show, Bathrop Spears Broadsides. The number, 427-3772. Let's hear some more street interviews.
And on the sidewalk we have fuck cops.
Unfortunately.
You mean there's a video camera around here somewhere?
So what happened?
He's saying that there was a video camera right here that supposedly came up with evidence that my friends supposedly tagged up this right here. There's videotape. There's video footage that he supposedly, again, here, this wonderful word, cannot show in or anywhere outside of a court.
Room.
Sorry, but no, this is BS, man. He's getting them all on things that probably may have could have happened. And because they didn't want to sign for a ticket, they didn't want to go through the whole entire court BS.
So that's why they're being arrested, because he declined to sign.
Yeah, they declined. They said straight up, this is not us. So she overheard, my friend over there, that he was nailing them because he couldn't nail them for this, because he couldn't hold this for them or to them, that he was going to hit them up for urinating in public or something.
What?
I don't know. It sounded like...
What is your name?
Oh, my name is Red, man.
And who is this dog?
Oh, this dog, this is D.O.G.
And this is the famous D.O.G.
Yeah.
Any other... And what is your name, sir?
Buck.
And the name of your pooch?
Bipolar.
And
I just walked up.
And you met
and seen everything
big
happen.
Pause.
And who is this excellent per pooch with you?
This is Amora.
So you guys are new in town, or?
Yeah.
Got here yesterday.
Yeah, I haven't been in here, but
welcome
more
to Santa
hours.
Cruz. Yeah, you too may be handcuffed before the evening is out.
Fuck that shit.
I'm used to it.
Talking. They tried to chat me up for having my dog down and around downtown, like because she's my service animal, but she doesn't wear the harness because I don't want to be identified as a disabled individual. That's my own personal business. Nobody else's. I carry the paperwork for her. So yeah, no, seriously.
So I mean, did you demand you show the paperwork?
Oh yeah, but they're not allowed to.
And so did you show the paperwork or not?
Oh yeah. You know, because I really don't want to go through all the BS and effort. Yeah, you know, that's an easy lawsuit, but really, what does it do for the city?
So you said that you have a disability, you have a dog.
We'll walk by to see what's going on.
Which is a service dog.
We'll come back in a minute. We'll walk along. We'll come probably back around.
I think I'll we can follow him. I want to see what's going on with him.
Yeah,
with
no worries, man. Dude, I'll be your secondhand voice on the whole entire scene because I've been tired of this whole entire business with Winston. You know, I'm not even in this town for more than 24 hours, and I know that guy by his name and by his badge number. Badge number 164.
So, again, the service animal situation, it's your understanding you don't have to show papers?
No, you're not supposed to have to be able to show papers to anybody. It's supposed to go into the whole entire thing of, she is my service animal, and I'm a disabled individual. It's... For some people, it's considered embarrassing. Me, I'd rather just not have to go through all the whole entire effort of going out and showing my paperwork.
Now, is this a California law or a U.S. law?
This is U.S. law.
Okay, and
American Disabilities Act of 1990.
And who requested or demanded you show your paperwork?
Oh, every single officer on the avenue so far today that I've bumped into.
And who have they? Do you remember any of the names of the officers involved?
Winston, badge number 164. Warren, badge number 154. And that's so far just today. I'm trying to remember some of the other ones that have asked me in past, and I just keep on walking normally.
And again, your name is?
My name is Red.
Thank you, Red. Looks like Officer Winston is riding off with some people in the back, you say? It looks like people in the back, vaguely.
Pulled up to the walk-by chalking that took place.
But it wasn't chalking, it was actually urinating in public?
Yeah, pretty much. Where were they peeing? They weren't peeing. They haven't been peeing since I've talked to them.
But did you take a urine sample?
Actually, I asked the officer to be able to show evidence that, you know, how do you have any sort of evidence that these people took a leak downtown? Drunk in public?
God, it's 5 hours, and I was like, no, they're my homies. I love you.
So what's your name?
I'm Ari.
And Ari, you say you heard the officer went to say he was taking the two into custody for...
Originally vandalism.
And then eventually...
Drunk in public.
Were they? They didn't seem too drunk to me.
No, they weren't.
Maybe a little buzz, but not drunk.
A little bit, but I've been with them all day, and they're not drunk.
And a point that has to be made here is that the original claim by, apparently, as I understand it, by Winston was that they were both, these two individuals were handcuffed and then who later were taken in the back of the squad car, were not simply, that there was video evidence that they had engaged in graffiti activity. And by graffiti they mean even just using erasable chalk. Then it transpires that that wasn't the issue, as that appeared to be less likely. It became drunk in public. And again, the problem here is that when an officer is trying to assert his authority and then is essentially being confronted by people who are trying to assert their rights and say, look, I have a right to be here. I have a right to use the public space. I have a right not to be intimidated, harassed, interrogated by you simply because... I don't know. You don't like the fact that there's chalk on the sidewalk downtown. You like the fact that I have an attitude that doesn't have a lot of regard for police officers who are walking up and down, treating people in this fashion. Then just because of that, you know, you can cook up a charge and send someone off to jail on suspicion of being a public intoxication, being unable to take care of themselves, which is simply false in many cases. And it becomes, you know, something that these officers think they can do just as sort of a curbside punishment activity. And we have to fight that. And the way to fight it is to draw a crowd of people to observe what's going on, ask questions. You don't interfere with this it'd be nice if you could, or in some cases it might even be appropriate to interfere with this bullshit. But, you know, you simply at least want to draw the attention of the community to how the money is being spent, and you don't give it, a wide berth, pretend it isn't happening, show some sort of undue respect for police officers who are engaging in this kind of behavior. And that, I think, more than trying to lobby the city council to change the laws or to create an accountability procedure for the police, which doesn't happen and isn't happening, may have more of an actual impact as we move along.
Able to take care of themselves.
Indeed.
So Officer Winston is, shall we say, abusing the ordinance.
I'd say so.
Oh, man, that guy, when he can't nail somebody, so far from what I've seen today, when he can't get somebody on a ticket, he gets shaky. He actually gets physically distraught over not being able to exert his, like, force on somebody. To be able to push somebody around, I think he's got a Napoleon complex.
Watch yourself, son, when you say things of that kind.
Okay.
There we go. I think Officer Winston is, he seems to be getting more controlled, but unfortunately his control seems to be leading to continued arrests of this kind, which don't sound good to me. It sounds like they are not justified by the facts.
It's abuse of authority and power.
In a word.
Well, to serve and to protect, or to serve his own self and protect his own ass.
Thank you, Red.
No worries. It was nice meeting you.
Indeed, and we should mention that you yourself were recently, at some point, maybe talking about the bust of a marijuana collective in Watsonville.
I can only give my two bits in on it, of the disappointment of future job opportunities I may have had, to where I wouldn't have to be spanging on these streets right here. And everything that I would have been able to do would have been 100% above the bar legal.
And what happened instead?
Oh, dude, the federal government got 2 weeks to be able to get or take care of whatever they had taken care of or hadn't taken care of in California or other states that are cool with marijuana.
Does that stand for redhead?
I just do it.
Whatever. But anyway, oh, man, that guy totally blew my train of thought.
You were saying that you would have been able to have a paying job. The feds were involved somehow in...
Oh, yeah, the feds. Obama gave them 2 weeks to be able to wrap up whatever they had as open cases. And if they did not open up, they'd be, opened up, they'd be closed immediately due to the fact that if the state was cool with with marijuana being used legally as a medicinal use, then there should be no issue.
Well, interestingly enough, L.A. cooperatives were busted, 2 weeks ago or a week ago by the feds. So all this bullshit, it's more Obama babble, actually, just like his babble about getting out of Iraq or, you know, less troops and less war in Afghanistan and Pakistan. It's same policies, unfortunately, with some minor modifications.
But if things keep on going the way that they're going, I give marijuana about either from 5 to 3 years more time of what it has before we have another prohibition of it, just like we had back in World War II. When the whole entire war was over, hemp was cut and so was pot. When before, they were telling farmers to go ahead and grow it in between times of their seasons for their regular crops. They'd, you know, get the soil reconditioned to be able to grow something else all over again.
So, any more details about this Watsonville collective that got closed down?
Other than the fact that a couple of families and a few other close friends got hosed? No.
Well, were they within the guidelines of SB 420 and Proposition 215?
Oh, beyond and above.
So
everything was 100% legit. It was merely they went in there, they swooped, they destroyed.
Feds or state authorities?
Feds.
Oh, because the problem in Santa Cruz is the state authorities more than the feds.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, we have the city authorities, actually.
I could have blown it out of proportion. I'll give that a mitt right there. But from what I understood, it was feds. Serious enough. Actually, no. Hey, I'm going to have to get a hold of my homeboy to be able to find out exactly what is.
We'll get more details from you when you have the specifics.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Oh, I appreciate your researching this for us, Red.
Yeah, no worries, man.
Thank you.
And Red was invited to appear on the Sunday show the following day, but he did not show up. However, we do have his account. We also have the account of another witness whom I spoke to, a woman who told me that she did see a couple of the people who were involved in that group carrying a lot of chalk around and sometimes chalking on the sidewalk. She didn't know if those were the two.
And again, there were two issues that we were looking into. One was the massive chalking of the sidewalk that was happening in downtown Santa Cruz and the arrest that Winston did for apparently initially for the chalking, and then when that didn't seem to look like it was going to stick, for public intoxication, because you don't actually even have to fill out a ticket for public intoxication. You just take him down to the jail, they hold him for 5 hours, and then release him in the middle of the night. And often they have to wait a couple days to get their property back from the police department. It's a form of punishment, saying, see, we can harass you, inconvenience you, mess with you, unless you do what we say and present the right attitude. The other issue was the issue of marijuana, which I'm still interested in information about the closing of the Watsonville Collective, which I'd heard some brief accounts of, and I'm not quite sure whether it was done by state or federal authorities. As regular listeners know, there's been a moratorium on legal dispensary applications, which has resulted in the two applicants who might have been opening dispensaries in the next few months being denied that possibility for another half year, and probably being denied that possibility beyond that unless they can keep the landlord on the hook for that period of time. One of the big problems in Santa Cruz is finding a landlord who will permit marijuana establishment, and it's also hard to find a location because the city code is very restrictive.
Who are being taken into custody, or who are being led down the street in custody by Officer Winston. So that's not clear whether that was confirmed or not. About 9:30 on Sunday evening, cool Sunday evening on Pacific Avenue, August 16th, and here are some of the remaining graffiti in front of the El Centro. Over here we have Ticket Yourself Pig, and Love the Livestock, Tweakers Suck. Again, these are various chalkings written on the sidewalk in front of places like Pizza My Heart. There's a large couple of fuck something, hard to tell what, and various, some of the words are recognizable, smoke, LSD, and so forth.
No,
but it's not clear. In most places, the sidewalk chalking has been somewhat weakened, if not erased. Stop Snitching is in front of the Del Mar. Spear, dollar sign, please. I saw that yesterday. The usual spot in front of New Leaf, where music is often found at this time of night. There is somebody with a guitar strumming away. And we can hear a little musical stuff. Good. How are you guys doing?
Very well, thank you.
Anything happening out here?
Or? Not too late.
Reports from the street, perhaps?
What's up?
Any reports on police abuses? Or?
Yeah, they've been kind of like going through, kind of cleaning up the town, because I guess the college students are coming back in and they're trying to make it look all neat and nice, but it's not really working because college students go out of their way to come to Santa Cruz for that subculture, and they like that around. They like the street performers and the kids to be out here. That's the whole, I don't know, that's the Santa Cruz. I mean, you can't really get rid of that.
I see you have a UCSC Santa Cruz coat yourself there.
Well, I actually got this over at the River Street Shelter, and, you know, it was not too long ago that I discovered that it was a UCSC shirt, but you know what? I like the college. If I could afford to go there myself, I probably would, just to check it out.
What is your name again?
My name is Matthew.
Sorry, Matthew, like we've met before.
Yeah.
Any police action tonight? I've seen a squad car driving down.
Not really. They've been sticking to themselves and doing their thing, and, you know, only when it's really called for do they come out.
Officer Winston hasn't been stalking the street?
No, not tonight. Not really.
But he was on. I think he was on last night, for sure.
Yeah, he was. If it's a man, I think he was. He was out here doing some passive enforcement.
Short little guy. Anything else you've seen?
Not really.
And we're talking with
Ken Gilliland.
Thank you, Ken. And thank you, Matthew.
Yeah, no problem. You know, for the most part, it seems like they're waiting for the street people to kind of go overboard in their behavior. They've been kind of taking a more laid-back approach. But I can see as to where they're starting to get a little bit more impatient. Now we'll be kind of doing sweeps here sometime soon.
Are you outdoors yourself?
Yes, I am.
Any tickets for sleeping?
I have one, but it's going to be taken care of.
How do you know that?
I got friends over at the River Street Shelter. I've been out here a long time already, and you know that's I mind my P's and Q's, so the powers that be allow me to have that little leeway.
And how about you? Have you got any tickets for sleeping out?
Nope, not at all.
Are you sleeping out?
Yeah, in my van.
And is that because you're being discreet or because your van is secretly disguised as a police van?
it's probably I'm discreet, kind of blends in.
How long have you been in Santa Cruz?
Maybe 2 weeks.
Right. Enjoy your stay.
Thanks, I love it here.
Nice evening and a nice town.
Thanks for all your help that you've been providing out here. I know you've been out here for a long time now. I've been out here off and on for about 15, 16 years, and I've seen you out here almost every single year. So we appreciate all your help. I know kids come and go, or people come and go here, and they don't really get a chance to state that. But you know, I mean, I've noticed you out here. So.
Well, thank you very much, Matthew.
No problem. Thank you.
Have a good night.
You too.
And there are some useful instructions here, for example, in front of the Vita Lounge Grill and the A. Van der Krekhoff large brown pendulum statue, which earned its own notoriety because it was supposed to be forbidden to push, but everybody pushes it anyway. On the sidewalk is a bit of advice with a big arrow, push me, pointing to the statue. It's now Tuesday evening, August 18th, about 7:15, downtown on Pacific and Soquel. We have numerous musicians, harmonicists, jugglers, just a wide variety of youthful performers are hanging out near Alfresco's. Now, we have any comments, gentlemen? What is your name, sir?
My name is Savage.
And you are?
Sam.
Savage and Sam. Savage, I see you're fondling a glass ball there. Yeah. You always fondle your ball in public?
Of course I do. Contact juggling is one of the most far-reached arts of the ancients. So they're
a little circular, if you ask me. Yeah. I see are you associated with these two who are also doing some juggling and shoulder standing and such?
Oh yeah. Me and the guy with the board on his arm balancing it like that, met in New York about 5-6 months ago, started traveling together, and I grew up with this guy. We met Corey right here and started juggling with him the past week. So,
and are you getting any donations, or are you just doing this for the heck of it? I see there are numerous sort of...
How much longer are you all going to be in town?
No, I was traveling.
How long you been in town?
We've been here for about 2 or 3 weeks. Not too long, but this is the first place where we've actually stayed more than a week because we ran out of money, really.
Just because the folks here in Santa Cruz are tight, or are you just loose with your change?
Yeah, just loose with money. We're not very good with money, so therefore, what can you expect, you know?
A hand walker over there. What is this, a traveling circus?
Yeah, a little bit.
How many of you are traveling together?
As of now, we got about 6 or 7 going to San Francisco tomorrow. We're going to perform over there for probably 2 days at most, or come back here.
Name for your group?
It's called the Grand Finale. A psychological twist on things so that we can keep audience there by saying it's the grand finale, but it's not the grand finale. It's the beginning of the show, but, you know, it's grand finale material. So.
Tricking your audience.
Of course.
Right.
How you doing, man?
So, how's business in town?
It's okay. We are honestly all still developing our pitch and our ability to pitch, and it's a very strange psychology between the performers and the audience. So within that, I mean, there are tons of books written on pitches, and there's honestly a lifetime to learn about it. So the aspect of the pitch is what develops a good hat, and right now we have a decent pitch, which means typical decent hats. It's not wonderful. And but honestly, I actually don't even take a I don't take a share. They just take care of me. I mean, we can eat pretty much for free here, and you know, they buy cigarettes and things. I just quit smoking, so I wanted to take that $7 a day habit away. And honestly, you know, we don't have too much to keep up with. You know, we don't have to pay rent or anything, so
no police hassles.
A little bit. We got permits today by another magician that works down here. He really kind of took us under his wing and was helping us out.
You have a written permit?
Yeah, yeah. It's mainly for a stage show coming up on Labor Day at the Duck Pond. We actually have a stage thing. That's what he's writing out on that paper right now. And it's called the Gorilla Biscuit, featuring grand finale and all this. So,
he doesn't have a permit to do that juggling, I'll bet you.
Yeah, you actually don't need a permit here.
No, you don't.
It's but they do hassle us a little bit. We can't use fire, and they say knives are not illegal, but they don't want us to do it. So we just try and cooperate as much as we can with the police so they don't trouble us.
We've been talking with
Savage Skinner.
Thank you, Savage.
No problem.
Is there a website people can go to get your autograph, hair samples, so forth?
No.
Oh. Thank you.
Thank you.
Talking with Red. Hi, Red.
Hi.
You got your pooch with you, I see.
Yes, I do. DOG is here with me.
The so-called service DOG.
Yes, he is.
Now, you may remember some nights ago.
Really?
I think it was the evening before you agreed to be on the radio.
Yes,
and then didn't show up. We noticed a lot of chalk on the sidewalk, various slogans all over the place. And Officer Winston had scored two people in handcuffs. Whatever happened to those two?
Oh, those two individuals, they spent a night in jail. And
what were they charged with?
Oh, defacing city property.
So they were observed chalking.
I believe so.
And are they now facing trial for their chalking behaviors?
No, they were sent away. They were put on a bus and sent back to where they wanted to go.
Oh, really? Who provided the money for the bus?
I have absolutely no clue.
And when did this busing out of town happen?
A couple days ago.
How do you know it happened? What's your source?
Oh, my source is my friends who were given a phone call as soon as they got to San Francisco.
So, in other words, they called your friends here in town and told them that...
Yeah, what are you guys still doing down here in Santa Cruz? We're supposed to be up in Frisco.
How many of them were bused out of town?
I believe all three out of the six.
So, this was a chalking gang of six people?
Well, yeah, but I mean, the whole entire town was involved.
Really? Did you observe this chalking in process?
I guess I could be said I was there to observe.
Participating, perhaps?
Well, I wouldn't go far as to say that, but one could presume.
And how long did the chalking activity take place for?
Seemed like a day and a half.
And what prompted it? Was it simply a wild and crazy feeling, a determined ideology, an artistic spasm? What was it?
Opportunity.
Well, there's always the opportunity, whether it's because they sell chalk in the stores.
But, I mean, you know, the opportunity to be able to voice my mind for the time being and what was on it.
I noticed the chalk sidewalk seemed to be, should we say, barren.
Barren? Yes, they are. Pressure washers do amazing work.
Any police activity today that you've noticed you wish to comment on?
Absolutely none so far. But then again, there's still plenty of time tonight.
We'll keep our eyes open, and
We've been talking with Red.
Thank you, Red. All right, Free Radio wants to know, what's going on here?
We are Gorilla Biscuit Street Circus Theater.
I see you have some paperwork with you. What is that paperwork in?
We got permits to do a show Labor Day in Cooper Square and also at San Lorenzo Park, Labor Day weekend, and we're going to be juggling fire, doing machetes, so we got to have permits and stuff for all that, and yeah, right now we're pretty much practicing our routine.
You have various batons and rubber balls. I see no machetes. I see no flaming swords, no naked breasts, nothing of that sort.
No. Don't think fire... I know machetes are legal to do out here, but we just didn't bring them today. But fire, you need a special permit to do.
And your name is?
My name is Corey.
And Corey, again, what are the times and places for your upcoming shows?
Let's see.
Yeah, I'm going to beat you.
It is
And unfortunately, or fortunately, as the case may be, that those times have passed. It was Labor Day that they were talking about. And indeed, actually, I talked to them afterward, and they did their show without incident, and that was nice. Not as big a crowd as they'd hoped for. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. And the call-in number here is 427-3772. I'm also a kind of a... I follow a lot of the blogs and websites and occasionally grab articles that I want to read because I think they express views which, although you may find them more frequently on this station, you don't find them in the mainstream media at all. Let's see what I've got here. Here's one that interested me. Iraqi shoe thrower Muntazar Al-Zadi inundated with offers and gifts. Guardian. As his size 10 spun through the air towards George W. Bush, Muntazar Al-Zadi, the man the world now knows as the shoe thrower, was bracing for an American bullet. And this happened when Bush visited Iraq. I think it was back in either December or January, while he was still president, maybe even November. He thought the Secret Service was going to shoot him, says Zadi's younger brother, Matham. He expected that, and he was not afraid to die. Zadi's actions during the former U.S. president's swan song visit to Iraq last December, have not stopped reverberating in the 9 months since. Next Monday, when the journalist walks out of prison, his 10 raging seconds, which came to define his country's last 6 miserable years, are set to take on a new life, even more dramatic than the opening act. Across Iraq and in every corner of the Arab world, Zadi is being feted. The 20 words or so he spat at Bush, "This is your farewell kiss, you dog. This is for the widows and orphans of Iraq," have been immortalized and in many cases memorized. Pictures of the president ducking have been etched onto the walls across Baghdad, made into T-shirts in Egypt, and appeared in children's games in Turkey. Zadi has won the adulation of millions who believe his act of defiance did what their leaders had been too cowed to do. Iraq is, I guess we've got to get a couple of shoes for old Obama, folks. Get your slippers and your rubbers ready. Iraq has been short of heroes since the dark days of Saddam Hussein, and many civilians are bestowing greatness on the figure that finally took the fight to an overlord. He is a David and Goliath figure, said Salah al-Janabi, a white goods salesman in downtown Baghdad, whatever that may be. When the history books are written, they will look back on this episode with great acclaim. Al-Zadi's shoes were his slingshot. From his prison cell, Zadi has a sense of the gathering fuss, but not the full extent of the benefactors and patrons preparing for his release. A new 4-bedroom home has been built by his former boss. A new car and the promise of many more awaits. Pledges of harems, money, and health care are pouring into his employers, the Al-Baghdadiya television channel. One Iraqi who lived in Morocco called to offer to send his daughter to be Muntazar's wife, said editor Abdul Hamid Al-Saj. Another call from Zadi offering $10 million for his shoes, and another call from Morocco offering a gold-saddled horse. After the event, we had callers from Palestine and many women asking to marry him, but we didn't take their names. Many of their reactions were emotional. We will see what happens when he is freed. From the West Bank town of Nablus, Ahmed Juda saw the incident on television news and felt so moved that he called together his relatives for a meeting in a nearby reception hall. Juda, 75, a farmer and head of a large extended family, convinced his relatives to contribute tens of thousands of dollars to support Zadi's legal case. Juda himself decided to sell half his herd of goats. Another man asked if he might offer a young woman from his family as a bride. Juda said he would, if Zadi was interested. I said, "We are willing to present him with a bride loaded with gold," said Juda. I guess I hope they asked the woman first about this. "We are people of our word. If he decided to marry one of our daughters, we would respect what we said. We are compassionate and supportive to the Iraqi people for what they have gone through. We are people who have tasted the bitterness, sorrow, and agony of occupation, too. What he did for all the Arabs, not just the Iraqis, because Bush was the reason behind the problems of all the Arab world." Zadi's brother insists that no one put Muntazar al-Zadi up to such an act, throwing shoes at Bush. But he revealed that Muntazar had told him he had pre-scripted at least one line ahead of the fateful press conference. From the roof of his brother's new home, Mathem al-Zahdi said he always thought he would die as a martyr either by al-Qaeda or by the Americans. More than once he was kidnapped by insurgents. He was surprised that Bush's guards didn't shoot him on the spot. Muntazar al-Zahdi has told Mathem and another brother, Virgum, that he is planning to open an orphanage when he leaves prison and will not work again as a journalist. He doesn't want his work to be a circus, said Virgum. Every time he asked someone a difficult question, they would have responded by asking whether he was going to throw his shoes at them. Muntazar has alleged that after his actions, he was tortured by government officials. Medical reports say he has lost at least one tooth and has two broken ribs and a broken foot that has not healed properly. He will stay in Iraq, but first he has to leave the country to get his health fixed, said his brother Virgum. In the run-up to his release, Mathem, another brother, has a sense of the reception awaiting his brother. I feel like Michael Jackson at the moment. Everywhere I go, people are taking pictures of me and asking for my photo. If they do that for me, what will they do for Muntazar himself? And that's a story in The Guardian about the guy who threw shoes at the Führer Bush when he came to visit and was jailed and tortured for it, but is getting released soon. And apparently gotten a pretty powerful reception. An Afghanistan poll: most Britons want troops withdrawn from Afghanistan. 60% of the Britons want the UK military to release or to withdraw from or reduce its presence in Afghanistan. That's the United Kingdom, the British military. According to an international poll released today, which showed that the British are most hostile in Western Europe to their troops' presence in Afghanistan. A separate British survey showed that a similar figure believed UK troops should never have been deployed in Afghanistan and Iraq. And what should your country do about its troop levels in Afghanistan and in Britain? 41% say withdraw them all, 19% say reduce them, 27% say stay the same, and 11% say increase them. In the United States, 19% say withdraw, 11% say reduce, 32% say stay the same, 30% say increase, and 8% didn't want to talk about the issue at all. But there has been a more recent poll, I think, around Afghanistan, which shows a majority want to have the troops either reduced or removed, a slim majority in the United States. So there's a longer story on that, but interestingly enough, here's a fantasy speech that Carl J. Estabrook would like to have seen Obama give to the Congress in yesterday, but which he didn't at the joint session. I come before you tonight in a spirit of remorse, which I find requires more audacity than hope does. When my administration entered into office, we faced three overwhelming problems: a financial crisis and recession, a war in the Middle East on several fronts, and an unresolved health care crisis for many Americans. We immediately addressed these problems with the following actions, respectively. One, we bailed out financial institutions and corporate entities too big to fail with massive subventions which found their way into the pockets of the richest people in the country. Two, we increased the killing in the Mideast by carrying out the previous administration's plans for Iraq, sharply escalating President Bush's war in Afghanistan, and extending it into Pakistan. Meanwhile, we gave our client Israel a free hand to turn Gaza into a prison camp. And three, we allowed certain cosmetic changes to the American healthcare system to be discussed while making sure that the profits of the medical financial complex would be protected and increased. And remember, this is the fantasy speech that Obama didn't give. Listening to the advice of the American people, I have concluded, to my vast dismay, that all of these initiatives were mistaken. They exacerbated the problems that they purported to solve. Therefore, tonight, I am announcing a change of course in all three areas. One, financial institutions and corporate entities have been bailed out with public monies. We'll have new boards of directors charged with the responsibility of running those enterprises for public benefit rather than private profit. General Motors, for example, will turn its attention to mass transit. The same will be true of financial institutions. Mortgage holders, for example, will be charged with keeping people in their homes. The housing market will be revived, in part, by ending foreclosures. Two, U.S. troops, allies, and contractors will be withdrawn from Iraq and Afghanistan as quickly as possible, consistent with their safety and the wishes of the local populations. As Mr. Robert Federer of Fort Lee, New Jersey, wrote to me to ask, how will we ever get our troops out of the Middle East? I replied, in the words of the late Herb Cain, ships and planes. All military aid to Israel will be ended, and non-military aid will be resumed only when Israel complies with international law by withdrawing from the occupied territories. 3. Medicare will be improved and extended to all Americans. Its 45-year history and the experience of the other industrialized countries shows us how to do it. When you need medical care, you will go to the doctor or health care provider of your choice, and the federal government will pay the bill. There will be no need for you or your employer to provide private medical insurance, and the money saved from premiums will be greater than any increase in taxes. Existing insurance companies will be acquired by the government to the extent that they have assets, for example, expert personnel, useful to the community. In each of these matters, we have resolved to change the course in a direction that polls indicate is approved by a majority of Americans. So I call upon all Americans to impress on their congressional representative the need for these reforms. There is much more to do. 40 years ago, the most progressive U.S. administration since World War II proposed a negative income tax and a guaranteed annual income for all Americans. That was the Nixon administration. And the proposal almost made it through Congress. It's time to renew and fulfill that promise. Next week, I will ask Congress once again for time to speak, to outline a vast revision of the tax laws to achieve that end. The goal is nothing less than the securing of the inalienable rights of the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness to all Americans in a practical and not merely a theoretical way. There is much to do, and the time is short. God help us, and God save the United States of America. Good night. This is C.G. Estabrook's fantasy speech by Obama that, of course, has never been made and will never be made. What's happening, of course, is an increase in troops and an increase in military activity, an increase in contractors over in Afghanistan and Iraq, and the mass murder machine gears up while the rest of us watch our homes. Those of us who own them, some of them go into foreclosure, watch the rents rise, watch unemployment rise. It's a grim scene. That's almost it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides tonight. If you have any comments or calls, you better call in fast, because I expect to hear Uncle Dennis. In fact, I do hear Uncle Dennis pounding at the door. I will have to open the door for this questionable person. Oh, no, it's not Uncle Dennis. It's one of his surrogates, the evil, self-loathing Latino Native American guy whose name I forgot. We got a caller here, however. Hi there, you're on free radio with the rapidly disappearing Robert. Hang on.
Sorry. A Latino guy there?
The Latino guy, are you, how Latino are you? Are you a Latino? I don't know.
I mean, like, did he, like, come in from Watsonville?
No. This is Skidmark Bob, who's got a questionable Hispanic heritage and Native American heritage.
Oh, you mean like he's an immigrant?
I'm not quite sure. You know, you'll have to ask Skidmark himself. He is going to be on the next show, so perhaps he will
respond. I heard he was from Mexican radio. That's where I heard he was
from. Pero es necesario hablar en español aquí, porque él no habla inglés.
Like, he knows about barbecued iguanas.
I don't know what he knows. For those who don't know what I'm babbling about, this, of course, and we're talking, of course, with drummer Dave. Dave, do you have a two-minute report on the drum circle?
Yeah, man. There he was, like a star. Officer Harms, 1 out of 100. He got another one at the drum circle. You were, this guy named Rob Norris was there, and I'm telling you, man, that slam down Harm. You harmed him, man. 1 out of 100.
Drummer Dave, your enthusiasm is noted, and actually we're going to be playing my interview with Sergeant Harms. It's not Officer Harms. Show some respect here.
I hope Skidmark can feed him some. So they force feed Harms barbecued iguana.
Well, I...
You know.
Well, Drummer Dave, thank you for your call. I'm going to have to roll on you.
Peace, Rob, and Skidmark, great man. Peace, man. And I'll be listening in. And, hey, you have a good foggy Santa Cruz night, Rob.
All right, then.
Peace.
Peace. So we have about 2 minutes left in the show, so that means I'm getting out of here. I actually have reports from Fresno and Sacramento, which I'll have to give you on Sunday. There was a Safe Ground rally in Sacramento today. Attorney Mark Maron is doing a lawsuit against the city for its sleeping ban laws. Actually opened up a whole piece of property, a parking lot downtown for homeless people to sleep in. Police arrested 17 last week. The homeless have returned there. The struggle continues, and I'll be talking hopefully with some folks from that area on Sunday. So thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. I'm going to roll out the barrel with I'm not quite sure what I'm going to be rolling out with. Let's see what we got here. How about here's an old song from Malvina Reynolds. Some of you old timers may remember.
Little boxes on the hillside. Little boxes made of ticky-tacky. Little boxes on the hillside. Little boxes all the same. There's a pink one and a green one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same. And the people in the houses all went to the university, where they were put in boxes, and they came out all the same. And there's doctors and lawyers and business executives, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same. And they all play on the golf course and drink their martinis dry, and they all have pretty children, and the children go to school, and the children go to summer camp, and then to the university, where they are put in boxes, and they come out all the same. And the boys go into business and marry and raise a family in boxes made of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same. There's a pink one and a green one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same.
Cream to the dregs. Skidmark Bob sitting in for Uncle Dennis, who's out of town hiking. Stay tuned. We got a little more classic rock coming at you. That was the Beatles. Helter Skelter.
Helter Skelter.
Sergeant Peppers. We got a lot more. Stay tuned.
Yeah.